For the last several weeks, been talking about how do you want to live your life going forward from these trying times. Circumstances, this accumulation of events over the last few years is transformative for us as individuals and for the culture. And I think it's really important to explore this. I've done it several times, and certainly relevant. And I think that Buddhism, the principles and practices of Buddhism, have a lot to offer in terms of effective adaptation. So tonight's topic is mindful coping with consumerism. As I've been contemplating this talk tonight, I went to Wikipedia, which I've done several times before, a variety of topics, and this is what was described 2 days ago. Consumerism is a social and economic order that encourages the acquisition of goods and services in ever-increasing amounts. With the Industrial Revolution, but particularly in the 20th century, mass production led to overproduction. Supply of goods would grow beyond consumer demand. And so manufacturers turned to planned obsolescence and advertising to manipulate consumer spending. In 1899, a book on consumerism published by Thorsten Veblen called The Theory of the Leisure Class examined the widespread values and economic institutions emerging, along with the widespread leisure time, that's in quotes, in the beginning of the 20th century. In it, Veblen views the activities and spending habits of this leisure class in terms of conspicuous and vicarious consumption and waste. Both are related to the display of status and not to functionality or usefulness. Consumerism has been widely criticized by both individuals who choose other ways of participating in the economy, for example, choosing simple living or slow living, and experts evaluating the effects of modern capitalism on the world. Experts often highlight the connection of consumerism with issues like the growth imperative and overconsumption, which have larger impacts on the environment, including direct effects like overexploitation of natural resources or large amounts of waste from disposable goods, and larger effects like climate change. Similarly, some research and criticism focuses on the sociological effects of consumerism, such as reinforcement of class barriers and the creation of inequalities. So this all started as a result of the Industrial Revolution, which began in England in the 19th century. At that time, America was pretty much an agrarian society, a slave-based society, particularly in the South. But after the American Civil War, the United States became industrialized and also urbanized. Increasingly so. And of course, this really took off in the 20th century. As urbanization developed, it made the distribution of goods and services easier and more economically efficient. This really paid into the onset of disparities of wealth, what in the late 19th century and early 20th century was called the Gilded Age, or the robber barons. So there were people who were enormously wealthy and an emerging middle class, but most of the population was really poor and lived very hard lives. But as the 20th century unfolded, people became more and more influenced by media, particularly radio, when it first started to be developed prior to the Depression. And then during the Depression, it became even more prevalent, and advertising that came with it. And then on came World War II, and the incredible urbanization and industrialization of the U.S. that occurred during that several years time, 1941 to 45, really boosted the American economy. Very industrialized, very urbanized. And right after that, in the early 1950s, was television. Some of my earliest memories of television were in probably 1950 or 51, watching the Ed Sullivan Show and Howdy Doody and other things like that. So the whole notion of advertising really took off. That's when Madison Avenue became really important as part of American culture. So we were indoctrinated. Now, I was born right after World War II, so my indoctrination was not anywhere near as pervasive or impactful as it is currently. So those being raised in the 21st century are being exposed to very, very sophisticated propaganda that we call commercial advertising. But there's also misinformation and other means, such as what's called product placement in movies and TV shows, where companies will actually pay money to have their products show up on the screen. And the way people act in these productions seems to enhance the desire for people to have whatever it is the consumption, you know, the consumer world wants us to have. Very, very sophisticated. Capitalism pre-existed consumerism, but as it was stated in that quote, the from Wikipedia, the overproduction of goods, particularly after World War II, kind of demanded a society that was willing to consume. And of course, this gave people work. During World War II, people were at work either in the military industrial complex or adjunct industry or service related functions. So coming out of the war, what are you going to do? How are you going to keep people working? How are you going to keep things going? Consumerism. So it's had a tremendous effect on us. Part of it has to do with how we identify what happiness is. In psychology, there's what we call an external locus of control. Consumerism is sort of the most impactful example of that. It's a saying that I grew up with, grew up hearing, he who has the most toys wins. So the whole notion of what makes someone happy or what gives someone status, place in society, is organized around consumption and, of course, work. American culture is a workaholic culture. We have the least amount of vacation time of any major society on Earth. And of course, we consume far more things than other nations do. So we're immersed in that. What would be the harm of that? Well, That's part of what I want to talk about in terms of a person's sense of well-being, self-esteem, place in society, or even a sense of security. It has to do with that. Side effect, though, has to do with the Industrial Revolution, burning fossil fuels, extracting resources such as metals and timber. All of that is making the biosphere toxic, not just for humans, but for all the flora and fauna of the planet. Toxic byproducts of industrializations were pretty much ignored till the 1960s. The advent of Earth Day and the environmental movement. This is when Al Gore was educated in college regarding global warming, his first exposure to scientific research. And I also, in the late 60s, became very concerned about the environment. And then on into the 70s also. So there was information available back that far saying we've got to do something different. This is not good. Not just in terms of the environment, but also in terms of social order. It became more and more of a divide between wealth and poverty. And political organizations were organized around protecting the priorities of the wealthy, profits, and pretty much ignoring or providing propaganda that would dispel the fears of people who were concerned about what was going on. So this has become a dominant theme, and it seems to have reached a critical stage now, the whole notion of misinformation, social media, and so forth and so on. So even though it was well known in scientific world in the 1960s that we needed to make some changes, here it is, but 60 years later, and there's still a lot of controversy about the negative impacts of consumerism. Now, I'll be talking more about that when I talk about how to mindfully respond to the environmental crisis that's bearing down on us. So, even today, people are denying the impact of consumerism. And when I say denying it, it's being denied in the media, but people simply ignore the consequences of living the way we live. So that's been a major theme in the back of my mind as I've been thinking about and talking about how do we want to live going forward. That's been the theme of the last several talks. One of the things that's really interesting about the critical stage of civilization, world civilization that we're in right now, is that it also provides an opportunity for people to make significant changes. Now, what makes it difficult for us in terms of these changes is how indoctrinated we are with consumerism, how normal it is to buy things we don't really need, to throw away plastic. I have another quote here. This was in the New York Times yesterday. By some estimates, humans have manufactured about 8.3 billion metric tons of plastic, only 9% of which has ever been recycled. About 11 million metric tons of this plastic end up in the ocean every year. And without intervention, this number is expected to triple by 2040, according to the council. When these plastics break down, they can be eaten by marine animals, stunting their growth and causing reproductive problems. They've also been found in human organs, including placentas, as well as in soils and plants. This is scary stuff. This is being ignored. People don't stop and think about this. Now, it would seem that the alternative is to go back to nature. Now, I was a hippie and a flower child back in the 70s. And I actually, at one point, my ex-wife and I went back into the mountains of West Virginia to a valley called Brushy Fork. And I was ready to, you know, go back to nature. I was that afraid. This is when the oil embargo was going on in the 1970s. And so these are issues that are really important for us to understand and do something about. We cannot change the overall trend except one person at a time. I forget who it was. It might have been Gandhi who said, as hard as it may seem, we can only change the world one person at a time. Start with ourselves. I've often talked about sphere of influence. That's one of the reasons why I teach. This is my sphere of influence. This is how I can make the world a better place. Of course, those of you who know me that know that, you know, we have solar panels on our roof. We drive a Prius. You know, we're very thoughtful. My wife has been creating compost for over 30 years and recycling plastic in aluminum cans and steel cans we find by the road for over 30 years. So these are the things that I can do to make an impact on the environment. I can also be more thoughtful about what it is that I consume. And also, consumption isn't just about material things. Consumption is also about ideas, beliefs, experiences. You know, going to Walt Disney World, things like that. We can't stop it all. We can't make it go away. It would be catastrophic. I mean, one way to stop consumerism, I guess, is through some kind of world war, you know, where civilization cannot produce goods and services anymore, and that would be utterly catastrophic, post-apocalyptic. Buddhism talked about the middle way. You know, the Buddha was raised in the highest level of luxury that was available in his society at that time. And he turned away from that and became very, very ascetic, practically starved himself to death. He decided, you know, that neither way was working. He had to find a middle way, a way that is not overly self-indulgent, but a way that is not overly self-destructive. We can do that. We have to decide that it's important enough to do it. Now, you know, living where I live and living the way I live, it didn't just happen overnight. It's taken me decades to cultivate the life that I have now. And I attribute a lot of my ability to do this to my meditation practice, but also from reading a book, several books, Die for a Small Planet, which convinced me that I needed to give up eating meat. And Voluntary Simplicity by Dwayne Elgin, which helped me understand that I could recreate my life in ways that were not as caught up in consumerism. The actual title of it's Voluntary Simplicity Toward a Life That Is Outwardly Simple and Inwardly Rich. And those of you who have been on this property know that, you know, I'm not I'm very comfortable with my life. And there's probably a lot more that I could do to overcome how I have been indoctrinated by consumerism, and I'm something that it's a lifelong project for me. I hope that this discussion can be informative and hopefully inspirational in terms of you all finding ways that you can understand how you have been conditioned through craving and clinging, through greed, hatred, and ignorance in terms of consumerism, and can decide to make more thoughtful choices and take more benign action in terms of what is a good life. One of the things that constitutes a good life in the consumer world is overconsumption. And there's an epidemic of obesity in our culture now. It's probably the most obvious example of dukkha that comes about as a result of craving and clinging. So we need to really be thoughtful about this and take action to reorganize our priorities and pay attention to how we create a sense of self. You know, what is it that I really need to be happy? As I'm was preparing this and as I'm speaking now, this is the season in Christianity called Lent, leading up to Easter. And one of the traditions of Lent is renunciation. To give up something that's important, to learn how to let go, practice letting go. So that's part of the theme, the intention of this talk. How can we train ourselves to live a simpler life that's not quite so destructive, and perhaps more joyful, simpler? I was on a retreat once with my teacher, Matt Flickstein, and he had us make a list. Top 10 items, the most important items in our lives, things that we really need, felt like we needed to be happy, to be satisfied, to have a good life. And then he had us really carefully contemplate giving them up one by one. You know, what are you willing to give up? And what would it take for you to give that up? Now, some things are not, we're not giving them up. Some things are going to be taken away from us. Some things already are taken away from us. You know, the sense of security about whether we're going to get COVID or not. Hopefully that's passing. But we don't know, do we? Now we're confronted with the possibility of war. There's certainly war in Ukraine, but it actually could spread further. You know, giving up the sense of security. As a person who grew up in the 1960s, I'm very aware of the Cuban Missile Crisis and how frightened I was. Living here in Central Florida. What is it that we think we need to have in order to be happy, materially or socially? That's something to really important to contemplate. So I want to also want to say something about the topic that I discussed during the talk last week, which is addiction. I said that we live in an addictive culture. That's one of the core aspects of consumerism, is that the manufacturers, the advertising companies, want us to be reliable consumers of their products without thinking about it, without thinking about the consequences to our health, consequences to our finances, consequences to our environment, consequences to good social order. to not think about it, but instead, you know, enjoy, indulge. So I really want us to think about this in terms of trying to overcome an addiction, because it's that tricky. One of the things that people say in recovery circles is that addiction is a cunning and baffling disease. You think you've got it licked, and then something happens and you relapse. Now, for an alcoholic or a coke addict, that has more severe consequences. But if we think about thoughtless, improvident consumption as a form of addiction that has negative consequences for oneself and for society and for the planet, what are you going to do about that? How can you go about doing something to correct this? How do you want to live? So, the other thing I want to say about this before I offer some suggestions in terms of adapting, we are going to be changing. We already have changed. Been a lot of changes socially, a lot of changes economically. Inflation is happening now. Price of gas is going way up. That we are forced to contend with that. It's stressful to be forced into change. It is less stressful to intend to change. It's still stressful, but when you decide that you're going to make changes and you think it through and you take effective action, that is less stressful on yourself. Something to contemplate. This is well researched. So, what kind of lifestyle do you want to have? What constitutes a good life for you? How does that relate to your relationships, to your how you make money, your lifestyle? So, first, contemplate what strongly established consumer patterns are dominant in your life. Take a look at that. How important is it for you to be able to have your favorite beverage? You know, Russians are going to have to give up McDonald's, apparently. And
Starbucks.
Right? They're being forced to change. They're not going to like it. What's going to happen when we can't get what we want because of environmental factors or financial factors or sociopolitical circumstances? How many streaming services do you really need to subscribe to? How important is fast food in your life? You know, fast food, a lot of, like McDonald's, is very destructive of the environment, and also high caloric food contributes to the obesity. It all connects. It's one of the things that's embedded in Buddhism, is interdependence. All these different elements, these factors fit together into who we are, physically and psychologically. What are the consequences, personally, socially, or environmentally, as a result of these conditions, living the way you live? I made a conscious choice over 20 years ago. I was living on the other side of Orlando, and my office was here in, Castleberry and Winter Park. I decided, as part of my, you know, how do I want to live protocol, to not have to commute anymore, to be able to walk to work. And so we moved here. And we chose this property because it provided an opportunity, the building we're sitting in right now, for this meeting. Right? These are conscious choices. I don't have to worry about the price of gas now. So I don't have to commute. Now, I don't know what your circumstances are. A lot of you perhaps can work from home because of the pandemic and the internet. All right? But think about this. What are the consequences of your choices? Are they really helpful, or are they digging you in deeper into debt, causing you problems with your health, creating problems for the environment? You know? I want to apply the protocol of the Four Noble Truths to this process. I've already mentioned the first one. What is it you're impacted? How are you impacted by your choices as a consumer? You can't avoid being a consumer. You got to have food. You got to have electricity. Got to have a vehicle, probably. Got to have shelter. Got to have clothing. You know, how do you prioritize that? How does that relate to the first noble truth of dukkha, the stress and confusion? What is your level of stress? What can you do to mitigate that? Is it worth it to go through all the struggles you go through to have the status that you have, or you think you have, or you think you need to have? How does it affect your body? How does it affect your sleep, your health? What's the conditioning in your mind as a consumer? Analyze it. Investigate it. You have values that you were indoctrinated to growing up through advertising, through cultural norms. Just to kind of, as a sidebar, this is what the whole critique is about in terms of critical race theory. You know, the whole notion of critical race theory is not so much that people decide to be racist. It's that the way the society is organized creates disparities that seem to land on people of color. Not because white people necessarily choose that, but that's because we don't question it, right? That's the kind of thing that we're talking about with consumerism. We don't question our values, our priorities, our goals. We don't question them. I'm inviting you to do that based on first and second noble truths. Third noble truth is, you know, relief from the distress and confusion. I am generally less stressed because I don't have to commute. I don't have to get in traffic. I haven't had to get in traffic to go to work for 20 years or more now, 22 years, right? But that was a choice that I made more than 20 years ago, more than 22 years ago. It's not like it happens overnight, but you can start to investigate and reevaluate what makes a good life. Start to nudge yourself in that direction. That's how I've done it. Little choices, little nudging choices here and there to create a life that's more adaptive, less of a carbon footprint. What is your story about yourself? Who you are? What you stand for? And then the fourth noble truth is, you know, the Noble Eightfold Path, wisdom, you know, right understanding, right intention, virtue, right speech, right action, right livelihood. I tend to, in terms of right livelihood, I'm talking about right lifestyle in terms of consumerism. And then, of course, the action aggregate, the action clause, right effort, right mindfulness, and right concentration. So using mindfulness meditation protocols, noticing when your mind goes away from the breath to some kind of consumer strategy. I need to have such and such. to really think about that, or I'm not good enough because I don't have such and such. Think about that. Decide, oh, that's a fabrication in the mind. Go back to the breath. Let it go. Recondition your mind. Reinvent yourself. What your values are, what your priorities are. Particularly the awakening factors of mindfulness and investigation of mental phenomena. To pay attention to how you're being influenced by commercials. That's one of the things that I do when I'm sitting and watching TV. I pay attention to commercials. Commercials. Most commercials are incredibly deceitful. Incredibly deceitful. Take a look at that. They show people, happy people, who probably don't look like anybody you know. Right? They're people who are hired because they meet certain standards of appearance that are attractive. And they wear certain clothes and they do certain things. You know, reality TV shows. This is who you are. This is how you're supposed to be. And we don't look like that. We don't live like that. But somehow or other, that's a good, where those people live, how they're behaving, that's the good life. Pay attention to that. I mentioned product placement. My wife and I have made a routine of watching The Big Bang Theory at night. One or two episodes. They're brief, they're 30 minutes. But one of the things that I noticed is I wonder what's on the mind of the people who put these shows together. In some of the sets, there's a wheel on the wall with 8 spokes. Nothing fancy. It looks like it's made out of wood or plastic. It's not like a wheel on a cart or anything. It's obviously decorative, but it is a wheel with 8 spokes. It makes me wonder, you know, why did they put that there? If that's indoctrination, I'm all for that. Of course, you have to know what you're looking at, right? So take a look at what's the setup in these different TV shows and movies that you watch. What are they trying to get you to be, to regard as important, as valuable, as self-defining? You really want to identify with that. You really want to be... you think that possessing a certain kind of product is really what's going to make you a good person or a happy person or a successful person. Because that's what the TV is going to say. Not explicitly, but implicitly. Pay attention to that. Then you bring into play right effort, which is the effort to bring your attention away from craving and clinging to a more wholesome self-state organization, more benevolent actions. Mentioned this is Lent. What if you decided that you were going to intentionally give some things up just to see what it's like? You know, you view this contemplation. Do I really need to have such and such a beverage? What if I give it up? You know, what potential benefits might come from not drinking sugary drinks anymore? Or not eating meat anymore? Meat is getting very expensive. On TV today, price of gas is highest that it's ever been in the U.S. Highest that it's ever been. Riding on the local commuter train has gone up 40% in the last several weeks. Isn't that interesting? But they also interview people who say, I'll never do that. I need my car. Yeah, but then I've got to spend $50 to fill the tank with gas every week. I can't afford that. But I'm not going to ride that train. Where's that at? What's that mean? So think about how you are conditioned, because you are. Every one of us. We are immersed in it. They say that, you know, you can't. You know, a saltwater fish doesn't know it lives in salt water until you put it in fresh water. then it struggles and dies. So we're immersed in consumerism, just like a fish is immersed in salt water. Now, fortunately, we can adapt and change. That's what mindfulness meditation and the Four Noble Truths can provide us with the ways and means for doing that. So in my notes, I have put a couple of URLs for websites that have to do with voluntary simplicity. One of them is called choosingvoluntarysimplicity.com. The other one's called simplicitycollective.com. So you can download the notes and click on it and see what you can find out. So that's what I have to say tonight about consumerism. Questions, comments?
Well, I have a...
Okay, Charlotte?
Yeah. I have a... I've come to the conclusion. It's a belief. I've come to the conclusion. Have caused the sixth extinction. And that... are toast, along with most other animals. Rather than running around going, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, I've just chosen to focus my life on making the lives of other people better. That's meaningful. And it's what I'll do for the rest of my life. But I don't think they're going to be there's probably that the momentum that has been created since the beginning of the industrialization has is we can't stop it. We today stop burning fossil fuels, period. It would still happen. But we've passed the point of no return. But that doesn't make me sad.
Well, you know, and I have had this conversation before, and I think that your argument is very reasonable, but I also think that it's possible that we can adapt. It will be very different. Civilization will be very, very different 100 years from now. But that actually has some potential for hopefulness, provided that people become more rational and more insightful in choices. To me, that's the thrust of why I'm doing this, is to offer that opportunity. We can change ourselves and have an influence on our sphere of influence. And perhaps that will nudge at least a significant portion of the population into more adaptive behaviors. I do think that their people will survive, but the nature of civilization will be very different and hopefully not more primitive, perhaps more sophisticated and more well integrated into the planet's biosphere. Now, I'm going to be talking about this next week because the topic for next week is ecology, Buddhism, and the environment. So we'll to be continued in that regard. But your point is well taken, dear. It's dukkha. It's definitely dukkha right now, worldwide. But it's not hopeless. But we have to. You know, the reason we have to be aware of dukkha is because it motivates us to change. The Buddha said, if I did not think that people could awaken, I would not tell you you could. So the implication of that is that once you have a deep understanding of the existential crisis that we're in, we can do something about it, using perhaps the model of the Four Noble Truths. Because, you know, consumerism is a very toxic example of craving and clinging. It's become normalized. It has to change.
Well, in regards to that, I have way too much stuff.
Yep, me too.
And the way I acquire things most of the time is they're used. So I don't pay full price, and I feel like I'm not adding to the goods of the world, and I'm certainly filling up my house.
Yep, yeah, we do a lot of yard selling and thrift store shopping.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another way you can manage it. So I want to do the give other people opportunities to ask questions or make comments as well. Yeah, Lily?
Hi. What I wanted to say is
I'm sorry,
you, I hear you fine at this end.
Okay, then I'll try. I have to take off the thing. So I was hoping that, you know, with the whole pandemic, I remember the pictures when you saw certain mega cities, you know, where, for example, in India and Mumbai, where all the smog, you know, went down after several weeks because there was no transportation and all these things, and how in Venice the marine creatures came back into the canal. So I was really super hopeful at the beginning, and I remember us having these talks at the beginning of the pandemic. I was very hopeful that a lot of minds are going to change, and I know that there is a lot of change still going on, and people have been changing throughout the pandemic. I somehow just feel, and I observe it as well, that now everything, or after the pandemic, at the end of the pandemic, everything is going back to, you know, kind of like people want to forget what they've been through. And it's incredible. I really, when I go shopping, I like to observe how much people are buying and what they're buying and how they're looking at things, you know, kind of like, do I need it or not? And then in the end, they put it in. So I'm just wondering if, I feel that COVID was such a huge hit, and it was such a big change, but I'm not sure if it was big enough to make that big, you know, change in consciousness to direct people into a different direction. So I'm really hopeful, because I know that there's still a lot of change going on, and people are changing and looking for ways to make it simpler. But I was somehow shocked a little bit how everything went back to more consumption. Like, oh, you missed now 2 years of buying whatever, so now you can kind of, you know, catch up with everything that you were not able to buy.
Yes. You know, you're well informed, Lily, through your practice and your research. So you can also be effective with your children and with people around you, not necessarily, you know, standing on a soapbox lecturing people, but, you know, the choices that you make. There are things that you can decide to do going forward with your life that can have an impact. You know, I was a professional artist for 17 years. And I decided that that was not going to make the world a better place. So I went to grad school to become a therapist. But I also started teaching meditation. And I also started to reorganize my lifestyle so that it was more conscious, you know, influenced by that Voluntary Simplicity book. You can do the same thing. Going forward, you can just make all kinds of incremental choices that are headed in a particular direction, informed by what you're studying and what you're practicing, and see what happens. I mean, that's all of us, any of us can do, is put these these different principles and practices into play and see what comes of it.
Thank you.
Yeah. And support each other in that. You got my support, you know.
Thank you.
Other questions or comments? Steve? Go ahead, Steve, and then Julian.
There's a read that I've seen published in Sustainability Magazine by the Global Sustainability Institute called Potential for Formation of Nodes of Persisting Complexity. And that's a lot of words, but they talk about the last 70 years as being the great acceleration. And it's a really good read for its introduction in itself, because it they talk about this, what I call an economic just focused on consumption and growth and jobs. They term it an economic superorganism that seeks to maximize energy consumption through self-organization on a large scale, and calls it a mega machine that's driven to ever greater size and scope by enhancing feedback of capital accumulation. Of course, none of that has to do with nature and, you know, just the limits to growth. So that conflict just exists and has brought you to the point in the last 70 years and up there in the last 1,000. I can send you the link to that if you'd like to see that, Peter, or anyone else.
Yeah, say it again. What's the title?
The document is Potential for Formation of Nodes of Persisting Complexity. And it actually, that document by the Global Sustainability Institute takes also Notre Dame information on the most resilient parts of it. Gives us a pretty good discussion of that too.
Yeah, so send me that information. You refer to a URL?
Yeah, I can send it.
URL and tonight, and I'll try to put it into the notes for tomorrow for posting it on the website.
You'll find it an interesting read for sure.
Okay. Thank you. Julian.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you for the reflection today about thinking the consequences of our choices. And I think, as you mentioned, maybe just by not realizing that this really interconnectedness about whatever we do or whatever we choose, for example, to buy, it has an effect on the physical environment and also in the relationship with others. And also I was thinking, as you mentioned, it's about renunciation and comfort, no? Like, for example, maybe people can start commuting using public transport, but it's now is the comfort, or just driving in your car and just being by your own and not being disturbed with other people talk. So I coming from another culture, the time I live in Orlando, I do see that consumerism in US is really exacerbated. And the system is all around that, no? Like you have a credit card and then the credit card sends you like reminders to use the card because there are these offers. And you really have to be very well conscious about your habit patterns of buying, because otherwise it's natural that you are going with the stream of consumerism. So for example, I have a friend in France that he says that credit cards doesn't exist in France. So it's very interesting to see how different cultures. I guess at this time, many countries are going to consumerism, but I've seen that in US it was very, I feel it more.
Oh yeah, it's reached a critical mass. Absolutely. What are we going to do about it? You know, that's the theme of these talks. How do you want to live your life? It's a rhetorical question. We get to decide, but we're having to counter the kind of embedded indoctrination that we don't even think about. We don't even question. Like William was talking about, you know, driving in a car and people saying, oh, I can't give up my car because if I ride on the bus or the train, you know, people will be talking, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, you're just used to driving in your car. That's all it is. It's conditioning. You can get used to riding on public transportation. You know, and the more people demand public transportation, the more it will be used. You know, but that's the kind of decision that each person has to make and act on. What are you willing to do differently? So, we're done for tonight. The topic for next week is the environment, how to live more mindfully in terms of the environment. And this is all integrated. It's all interconnected, which is something I'm finding to be very interesting. The whole series of talks, one leads to the other, leads to the other, which is what interdependence is all about. So, as our custom, let's sit for a moment. I wish you well. I hope that we all enjoy a safe and happy interval until the next time we have a chance to chat.